Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson, our Acting Deputy Editor.
Hello everyone.
Hi Sophia, how's your week been?
It's been a slightly tricky week, which I know we're going to touch on straight away.
Yeah, that's right. We had some very sad news come to us earlier this week. So Elizabeth McLean, Malcolm McLean's wife, told us that Malcolm had sadly passed away after a short battle with illness. So Malcolm was first employed at Boat International in 1991. He was by some distance our longest serving member of staff, and he was also somewhat of a legend in the superyacht industry. He started off on the commercial team, but then went on to be our kind of brokerage guru, really. And he was, there was no one quite like him, and I've never met anyone quite like Malcolm. He was a true superstar, and he was known up and down the superyacht industry, and the tributes we've had this week have just been amazing. You know, everyone from shipyard CEOs to the most junior brokers, everyone had a nice word to say about Malcolm, or a memory to share, or a hilarious anecdote, which and I'll be reading out some of those in a minute. But for everyone, you know, everyone in the Boat International family, it's been a sad and very somber week, as we've just considered, you know, Malcolm's considerable legacy and everything he achieved and everything he gave to us and the wider superyacht community.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously work with him on a day-to-day basis. And one of actually the positives of the pandemic was, because everything moved online, Malcolm always worked remotely in Scotland during my time at Boat. And because everything moved online, we did everything on Teams, and we have a Teams meeting every morning. So Malcolm suddenly used to join these virtually, always vaping and quite often on mute when he wasn't meant to be. Although this did spectacularly reverse itself. I don't know whether you remember the virtual quiz we did quite early on into kind of lockdown number one. And he joined not on mute and then proceeded to answer all the questions out loud. I mean, it was quite useful for those of us that didn't quite have his knowledge. But yeah, I mean, his passion was just unbelievable. He was so excited every time he got a scoop, and he'd message us all on the team. And anytime there was a big sale, he'd say toot toot in the Teams chat. And you knew you were in his good books when he called you ducks. So yeah, it's been a sad realization that I won't see a toot toot from Malcolm again in my Teams chat. He also, at times sought to give the younger members of the team guidance. I remember before my wedding a few years ago, him giving me some marriage advice, but with the incredible partnership that he had with Elizabeth, I mean, they've been married for 43 years. I think it was probably justified. And yeah, my thoughts are very much with Elizabeth and his stepson Chris this week.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Just remembering little moments like that are hilarious, aren't they? He was so idiosyncratic, Malcolm. Yeah. And he knew everything, and his knowledge was absolutely profound. And what you nailed it, when he got so excited when he had some news. And I think people in the industry also really appreciated that. And they knew, you know, he was just the go-to guy. And often when I'd meet another journalist in this industry, or you know, whoever it might be, they say, "Where did you get that story? How did you get that story?" And the answer was always simply Malcolm. Like, it wasn't, you know, he just had this network that was unparalleled. He had contacts in every corner of the industry, and they just fed him information. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I think one of the tributes that I read this week that I really liked was a broker saying that one of his favourite parts of closing a sale was knowing that he could tell Malcolm. And I can really imagine that kind of satisfaction, because Malcolm would be so excited on your behalf.
Yeah, he really would. So why don't we read out some of the tributes we've received about Malcolm. So Andrew Winch sent one in. So he said, "There will be a different spirit at boat shows and parties now. He had a twinkle in his eyes that always welcomed a conversation, the soft voice, the inquiry about how you were before any talk of commerce, a true gentleman, in fact, a captain of the ship of BI Yacht Sales. The industry of yacht sales grows bigger and bigger, as do the yachts, the designs, the yards. But one always knew that Malcolm had the news, the latest tidbit of intel. And if you could smile back to him, he might, just might, let you into that secret. So Mark Seaton also sent in a lovely message. Mark works at Yacht and Villa, but formerly worked at Boat International. And Malcolm actually gave Mark a job at Boat International back in 1999. And Mark said, in his role as sales director, Malcolm hired me in 1999 to work in the Kingston office on the advertising sales team of the German and French language versions of Boat International and various Boat International supplements. It was the chance of a lifetime for me at the time. It was my first real job after graduating from university, and I was a very young man with very little experience amongst a team of hardened sales professionals. Malcolm took me under his wing and even lent me £200 of his own money to help me survive and buy food until my first month's salary came through, as I was so poor. This was typical of his kindness. I'm sure that there are many in the yachting industry who, like me, were given a valuable career break by Malcolm and will be forever indebted to him for his advice and knowledge.
Yeah, I think I've really seen him with, you know, all new members that have joined the team in my kind of 7 years at Boat. He's always been so supportive. And you think he must have seen so many rookies come through and something like, oh, God, here we go again. But he never treated them like that. He always gave them his time and his knowledge. And, you know, that's a really special quality.
Yeah, it really is. And especially, I think the younger brokers, I think there's a real affection amongst the younger brokers whose first sale was written about by Malcolm. And there was one of the tributes, I can't remember, forgive me, from who it was from, but he printed, he has the story that Malcolm wrote about his first ever sale in the industry printed and framed above his desk, which I think is lovely. Simon Goldsworthy, a broker at Edmiston, said, I have known Malcolm since I first joined the industry as a broker and sold my first yacht. He was straight on the phone to introduce himself and make sure that the reporting from our announcement was accurate. At the time, I didn't realise how unusual that was, but nearly 20 years later, I can still say that he was one of the most professional journalists I have ever dealt with. He realised how much the detail of a sale matters to us and our clients and was always scrupulous about getting those details right so that what he published on the internet reflected reality. He was also generous with his praise and extremely knowledgeable, and I always enjoyed our little chats when we had the occasion to speak, usually after a sale. He was a gentle and caring soul, and I, for one, will miss him greatly. So that was from Malcolm's time as on the editorial side. But before he worked on the editorial side, he worked on the sales side and the commercial team. And Martin Francis sent a funny message. He said, my condolences to his family, you and all at Boat International. I remember Malcolm fondly, especially from the early 1990s. He used to phone me every year to persuade me to place an advertisement in the Superyachts book. He was always successful because we had a special deal, in quotes. No doubt he exercised the same charm with all of my peer group. I miss him those days and all his deals, which I suspect everyone was getting the same special deal. So I'll end with one very special and another funny memory, this time from Martin Redmayne from the Superyacht Group. So Martin used to work at Boat International all those years ago. So he sent one memory of Malcolm from the Monaco Yacht Show, amongst many legendary anecdotes, but he picked this one out as a favourite. So he and Malcolm were staying in a hotel at the Monaco Yacht Show. And he said, Malcolm always slept naked, apparently. And in this particular hotel, if you left your shoes outside your door at night, by the morning, they'll have been returned and cleaned. So Malcolm, being the gentleman and well-dressed, well-turned-out guy that he was, decided he wanted shiny shoes for the next morning. But as he stepped outside to leave his shoes by his door, the hotel room closed behind him, completely naked. So Martin says he was still in the hotel bar with a couple of clients when Malcolm appeared naked at reception across the hall, clutching a fire extinguisher to hide his modesty, to request eloquently with a slight slur, a replacement key. Martin says the image is burned into his memory.
Yeah, Malcolm at boat shows in the 1990s, there are some legendary tales. I'm sad that I missed that period. Well, sad or also maybe slightly relieved.
If I had a time machine, it would be hilarious to go back and witness Malcolm in his pomp at the Monaco Yacht Show. Brilliant memories, brilliant guy. Thank you everyone who sent in a tribute. There's still time. We're going to put them all together in a book of remembrance and present it to Elizabeth, his wife. If you'd like to add your own special Malcolm memory to that book, just reach out to me or email the team at podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com, and we'll make sure it's included. Thank you. Fair winds, Malcolm. I'll be having a dram tonight in your honour. I loved working with you. So let's talk Turkey quickly. I just wanted to send my thanks to a few shipyards I went to see on a trip to Istanbul a week before last. We blitzed the Istanbul area and saw a lot of shipyards in a very short space of time. So we checked out Sirena, yachts Mazu, New Marine, Akyat, Turquoise and Bilgin. After not being in Turkey for a few years due to the pandemic and various other things, it was great to be back. And Istanbul, I mean, what a town. It's so exciting. 20 million people or something. It's huge, because every time I've been there previously, I've been part of kind of a broker tour or a press tour or something like that. So it was all organized and you were, you know, in buses and things like that. And I hadn't been there as a tourist for a long time, but this time we were let loose on a hire car and we saw a lot of Istanbul, and it's vast and very, very exciting and, you know, cool too.
And how was the hire car? Because the idea of you and Harry from our commercial team let loose in a hire car in Istanbul, I mean, would keep me awake at night. How was it?
We drove very sensibly, I'll have you know. Although apparently, so they do have on the Istanbul highways, which are fantastic, all these brand new highways everywhere. It's great. So they have these cardboard cutout policemen pointing a speed camera at you on the highways, and they are quite convincing. So you think, brake. And then you realize it's a cardboard cutout. But, you know, I thought I was driving sensibly. And then this kind of Audi or something would speed by you on the outside lane at about 200 kilometers an hour. Brilliant time in Istanbul. Loved the city. I can't wait to go back. But the shipyards, blown away. I mean, the industrial capacity of Turkey, I had an inkling of how vast it was before, but seeing it up close, it's just so impressive. And some parts of Istanbul, the waterfront, it's just like crane after crane, travel lift, and the shed space is almost endless. But you know, the crazy thing is they're all full. The Turkish superyacht industry is the order book is groaning. So Sirena, they cannot build enough of their 88s, and they've got some really exciting plans going forward, which hopefully we'll hear more about at Cannes. I'm sworn to secrecy, but it's very exciting. Mazu Yacht are getting bigger. They build these very, very cool kind of day boats and weekenders, but they're getting into the genuine kind of passage maker cruiser territory, which is, you know, very exciting for them. New Marine, they cannot sell enough of these XP models. They've found real favor with the US market. And they can build a 26 meter in 10 months.
It's incredible.
Just incredible. I mean, and the shipyard's an interesting place because it's on the top of a hill, and I can't quite imagine how they get the boats out, but they obviously do because they're building so many of them and delivering so many of them. But they've got some really exciting plans, just a very impressive facility. So we went to see Akyat as well and met Mr. Ak for the first time. So Akyat, obviously title sponsor of the upcoming World Superyacht Awards. We went to see their facility and I had a good tour of Victorious, the 85 meter, because I didn't get to see her much at Monaco, but so it was really good to have a proper look around Victorious. And they've got some really exciting plans. You know, they can build up to I think 100 meters or even a bit bigger. And Mr. Ack himself, fascinating character and one of the most impressive car collections in the world. We went to see his racing circuit central office and Harry was in...
When I spoke to Harry about it in the office, his eyes kind of misted over in a way that I haven't ever seen before.
Like, I like cars. I mean, but I don't, you know, but Harry was weak at the knees. You know, you should have seen him walking around these sheds. And there was just, there had to be 600 cars or something, and tractors, boats, everything. You know, everything from a Caterham to a, you know, a classic 1957 Chevy. I mean, Mr. Ack has every car that's ever been made. You kind of think, you walk into one area, it's where the pits are for the F1, and there's this vast collection of cars, and you go, this is amazing. And then the guy goes, no, you haven't seen anything yet. And you walk into the next one. Then you walk into the next one. Then you go see the tractors. Then you go see the classic cars. So if you are a car nut, which our colleague Harry is, I urge you to go and see this collection. It really is something special and all perfectly functional and road legal. So the tractors could be ploughing tomorrow. They're all, you know, fueled and ready to go. And the cars, similarly, all taxed so you could drive them out onto the roads.
Yeah, I remember when I was speaking to Mr. Ack in Monaco, and he was saying as a child, his parents didn't have a car, but he used to wake up so that his next door neighbours used to drive him to the end of the road on their way to work and then chuck him out. And he used to walk back just because he loved being in a car that much. So it's, yeah, it's been a lifelong passion for him.
Yeah, and he's a collector. He collects everything. So in his office, he's got this big office, had a really lovely meeting with him, and he was talking us through some of his collection. But he said, you know, even in a warehouse somewhere, he's got the pens and the books he used in school all stacked up and neatly kind of aligned and, you know, recorded and things like that. So, you know, I don't think he throws a lot out, Mr. Ack.
No. Maybe a bit like your desk in the office, just a bit more organized.
Yeah. My desk is a disgrace. So who else did we see? So Turquoise, you know, they're completely full. And Turquoise, endlessly impressive shipyard. They build lovely boats. And chocker, absolutely chocker. So Blue 2 was there when we were there, but she was undergoing some work and all covered up. So we didn't get a chance to have a good look at her. But they're building an 87 meter, just so much going on. And then we crossed Istanbul to go see Bilgin. They're based at West Istanbul Marina. Which is a lovely facility, actually. And the Bilgin shipyard is very impressive, very clean, very ordered. The offices are very cool and modern. And they've got loads going on as well. So, yeah, I mean, just left just in awe of what's happening in Turkey. I feel like the center of gravity's, you know, being pulled east for the superyacht industry towards Turkey. I think... you know, just the quality and the size of the boats coming out of that country is just getting better all the time.
And from the cosmopolitan city of Istanbul, you yesterday went to Pool, which, you know, pretty similar, I believe. How's that?
Well, it was good. It was Pool or Barcelona. So at the start of the week, I was either going to be in Barcelona or Pool on Thursday, and it ended up being Pool. And but I loved it. So Sunseeker invited me down. There was a few other journalists there. We had drive at the eve, their 88 yacht and the 90 Ocean. So the 90 Ocean is a very impressive boat. And again, you know, like some of those Turkish yards who can't sell enough of these boats, that, you know, the 90 Ocean has just been a runaway success for Sunseeker. I think they've sold 20 or something of them. They're just, you can't build enough. They're commissioning them all the time. Bits of, you know, vast apartment-like space inside. You know, they completely acknowledge that, you know, it's a volume game now, and it's just all about building the biggest platform you can under kind of, 24 meter LOA, and they've done a great job of packing a lot into this 90, and they've done it, and they kept the boat, and it still looks good, you know. Some yards take a slightly more boxy approach, but Sunseeker is so synonymous with that kind of cool, kind of, you know, kind of slightly faster, sleeker style. And they've kind of maintained that, which is no small undertaking with the 90 Ocean, but very beamy and still does 30 knots. But it was bloody cold, I tell you what.
Yeah, I did see the images and videos that you posted. It didn't look that glamorous, but I'm sure it was fun.
It reminded me of my old days testing boats. It was I had a brilliant day. So thank you very much to Sunseeker. It was a lot of fun and great boats, brilliant boats. Sunseeker, hugely impressive yard, and I'd have a 90 Ocean in a heartbeat.
So perhaps unsurprisingly, given that you've been gallivanting around the place, that the March issue has gone to press and is now on sale. It's got the Lursan Moonsand on the cover, looking resplendent in front of Tower Bridge. Actually, it's a really cool shot. It's one of my favourite covers that we've done in a while. It looks great. It's also our Tech Toys and Tenders special. So there's plenty on kind of new tech, and also a great feature on the best electric tenders that are now on the market. So Ben Ainsley's column is back as we kind of start to build towards the next America's Cup. And he's got some really good insight on how the America's Cup and Formula One are working together. They're obviously working with Mercedes, but obviously Red Bull has come in. There's kind of rumours that there's going to be more and more F1 technology involved, so that's quite exciting. And then we've obviously got, as well as Moonsound, we've got your reports on Top 5 2, the Ferretti 1000 and the Mangusta 104 Rev. There's also a particularly good owner's profile section this month, if I say so myself.
Why is that so fun?
So no, I wrote two features for the owner's club section this month. One with Steve Rigby, who's the owner of 26.2 meter Hayes. This is first foray into your ownership, but he's definitely got the bug, and I expect to see him upsizing in the near future. I'm not sure his wife's so delighted by that prospect, but he's definitely got his eye on something bigger and better already. And I also wrote another feature, which is kind of my favourite features that I probably write for the magazine. They're called Epic Adventures. So this one was actually about last year's Voyager Award winner, which was V6. And the owner bought the yacht just as COVID was hitting, and kind of in a number of days bought it, put a new crew on it, sent it across the Atlantic. And then his entire family flew out and met it. And they went pretty much spent the entire summer on it, going from the Canary Islands through the Irish Sea, up the Scottish coastline, and then on to Norway and eventually Svalbard. The owner's also an avid kite surfer, so there's some amazing shots of him kite surfing in all these different locations. You know, he went from kite surfing in Tenerife to kite surfing in the Svalbard with kind of polar bears hanging out on the shore. It's a great story. And I love to be able to talk to owners and captains that are doing those kind of trips with yachts.
I think these might be my favourite stories that we publish. We don't do enough of them, and I'm always kind of desperate to do more. But we're always on the hunt for great stories of fantastic super yacht cruises. So if you're listening, get in touch. But this is a great one because it won, yeah, like you said, it won the Voyagers Award at the last World Super Yacht Awards. It was a real COVID escape for the family, wasn't it? Fantastic trip. They saw some amazing stuff.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting is the owner very much came from the perspective of just trying to keep his family safe and his children safe, and that seemed like a way, but actually it made it a kind of once in a lifetime trip, because when they were in places like the fjords, they were the only yacht there weren't any cruise ships or day boats or anything like that. They had the, you know, these incredible landscapes just completely to themselves.
Yeah, what a trip. So read all about it in the March issue of the magazine. There's loads more stuff in there. A Moonsound, hell of a boat, really really lovely boat. That Mangusta too, I'm in love with that Mangusta. It is so, so sexy. It's such a good looking boat. So that was my kind of weak at the knees moment. I'll leave the cards to Harry. I'll take that Mangusta.
Well, speaking of weak at the knee boats, the Boat International Design and Innovation Awards have been announced today. The winners will be revealed on the opening night of the Super Yacht Design Festival in Milan. It's really nice to have them back together again because COVID sort of played a bit of havoc with that, but they're back together, which is great. There's 15 categories, so I don't think we've got time to go through them all now, but you can find the full list of finalists on the website. I did just want to kind of Oscars style highlight a few yachts that I felt had done particularly well as finalists. So the Wally Y200 is a finalist in no fewer than 5 categories. So it's up for the Outstanding Exterior for a Motor Yacht, 24 to 39.9 metres, Best Interior Designs for 499 GT and below, Best Naval Architecture, Best New Series, and also Outstanding Lifestyle Feature for its Master Cabin. I mean, I guess it was probably one of the standout yachts of last year, so it's probably not surprising to see her nominated across so many categories.
Yeah. And again, you know, she's kind of slightly answering the same problem that the 90 Ocean is facing, although in a very different way. You know, it's how do you get as much boat under 24 meters as is physically possible without making it a kind of a caravan. So she's in 5 categories. I think that Best New Series category, that's really competitive because that's actually got the 90 Ocean in it as well and some other really standout boats. I think they introduced that category last year or the year before, and it's very competitive. But it's absolutely right that we address that part of the market because there's so many boats sold in that kind of 24 to 30 meter space, and not many other, you know, companies track that part of the market, but we do, and it's so active, especially in the last year. It's just blown up. But some other brilliant boats in the running, you know, especially the tenders as well. So just to pick out a few names, so Nord's in there, some great sailing boats, Tiniwa, Perseverance, that Baltic, Path, another Baltic, Grace 3, Alwab, which is the cover boat of our April issue, Fee Phantom RJ, Tatiana, the Bilgin, Yeah, loads going on, and yeah, some brilliant boats in the running for the BDA. So that's all happening in June.
It's all happening in June, and yeah, full list of finalists are online. It's the bane of Holly, our digital editors, getting all that information online in a way that is readable. So go and enjoy it and
Yeah, it's
delve
not
in.
easy. It's not
Yeah.
easy. Yeah, there is a much better solution nowadays, though. So it's much more digestible, all of that stuff on the website. So let's talk through some headlines quickly. Sophia, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so I thought I'd start with the news that Perini Navi will be fully operational by the end of 2022. The news comes after the Italian Sea Group completed its acquisition of the bankrupted Perini Navi business and estate last month after entering an 80 million bid at the end of 2021. In an announcement on the 21st of January, the Italian Sea Group confirmed the completion of the acquisition after paying the deposit of 8 million at the end of last year, and then the balance of 72 million was paid from a combination of cash availability, IPO proceeds, and bank credit lines. The CEO of the Italian Sea Group, Giovanni Constantino, has revealed that employees have now returned to work at Perini Navi shipyards in Via Reggio and La Spezia.
Next, we have the news that the 117-meter Ocean Coast superyacht Infinity, formerly known as Project Y719, has been spotted on sea trials. So, Infinity is currently the largest motor yacht under construction in the Netherlands and is also the largest yacht ever launched by a Dutch shipyard. Although the record-breaking build will soon be superseded by Ocean Coast in-build 127-meter sailing superyacht Project Y721. Bridge or no bridge? That is the question, Sophia.
I'm very confused as to what's now going on with the bridge. I mean, there's been some quite serious backtracking, and apparently the bridge is surviving, but
So the whole bridge won't be dismantled anymore.
no
Okay.
no apparently not. But there also has been quite a severe backlash to the idea of the bridge being dismantled, to the point where I think 3,000 people have signed up to throw eggs at the yacht as it passes through the bridge if it is dismantled. So I think there's also a little bit of understandably just trying to kind of smooth out the situation.
That
But
wouldn't be a good look.
it is going to have to come out the yard at some point. So yeah,
Yeah.
we'll see.
Well, whether a bridge in Rotterdam is dismantled for this boat to get to sea or not, we'll keep tabs on that story. But back to Infinity. Details about her remain fairly sparse, but it is known that she features a steel hull and aluminium superstructure, five decks, and is scheduled for delivery this spring. It comes after the Mammoth 117-meter superyacht was launched from the yard's facility in October 2021.
So finally, we just thought we'd touch on that the keel has been laid on the first Damen Yachting Sea Explorer 60. The yard unveiled the 60-meter addition to its Sea Explorer luxury expedition range in September 2021. The yacht is the fourth Sea Explorer built by Damen Yachting. The laying of the keel marks the vessel's first major milestone, and she's due for delivery in 2024. Sea Explorer design manager Enrique Tintor, who was actually spoke at Explorer Yacht Summit last year, said that the 60-meter expedition vessel is a yacht for all seasons. It's very exciting to be here after all the months of detailed engineering. To see the Sea Explorer 60 beginning to take shape, it's a fantastic layout with lots of flexibility.
I'm going to pick you up on, I think it's in Tentore.
I should know. I mean, I know Enrique. I really should know how to say his surname by now, so I apologize.
Yeah, Enrique is a great bloke. I'm sure he'll forgive you. Tentore, potato, potato. So let's move on to the data story this week, which, as ever, is brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. Sophia, take us away.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago we looked at destinations which were proving popular this winter. But this week we're actually going to look at the far-flung corners of the globe where very few yachts are venturing.
So we looked at the kind of the big decline and increase in activity in the more popular areas, didn't we? Western Med, Greece, Turkey, places like that. So these are the real kind of edges, the peripheries of the superyacht world.
Yeah, so starting in South America, Chile, but well, both Chile and Argentina have seen a decline in yachts in the last few years, which I think all these destinations is expected to see a decline because COVID has just made it harder to do these kind of trips. So there are only 9 yachts that were in Argentina last year. There are 14 in Chile. I know there's been at least 10 yachts in Antarctica this season, so I think it is picking up, and I think we'll see even more yachts head that way next year. I think 2022 will be a seriously bumper season. we interviewed the owners of Makata a couple of years ago for another of those epic adventure features that we were talking about, and they'd done all of that kind of Patagonian coastline. And yeah, if you're thinking about it, go and find that feature, because it will definitely make you want to do it. Yeah, some of the experiences and the scenery just looks incredible. Moving across to the Indian Ocean, Madagascar. So in 2019, 6 yachts visited, and in 2021, just 2 yachts visited. It's definitely a destination I've discussed a couple of times with people from EOS and places like that. It's meant to be great, but I think that coastline still struggles a little bit because of kind of safety concerns around piracy. And I think, you really have to plan if you want to be there. Because similarly, there are no yachts that have been seen in Mauritius at all this year, which slightly surprises me. Sri Lanka, on the other hand, though, is still seeing relative numbers. So there were 15 yachts that visited in 2021. I also have heard rumours that they are talking about putting increased facilities into Sri Lanka. So that might be interesting to see. And also, I think they're probably picking up. I think the Maldives are seeing increased traffic. So I guess it's kind of a natural flow to carry on to Sri Lanka. Then kind of looking at Asia, there were 12 yachts in Japan in 2021. We actually wrote a big feature kind of in the run up to the Olympics about whether you could cruise Japan. And Captain John Mass, who's now on board Northern Sun, was quoted quite heavily in it. He absolutely raves about it as a destination. But again, I think COVID probably makes it trickier. And then another destination in that part of the world, Vietnam, is really very few yachts going there. So 3 went in 2019, none went in 2020, and 1 was there in 2021. I know Vertigo went there probably nearly a decade ago now. But I remember when I spoke to her former captain about that, he said that it was beautiful, but there's just a lot of red tape and paperwork. So you've really got to kind of have an owner that really wants to be in those waters to make it worthwhile.
So let's, some interesting figures there. I mean, we're talking very low numbers, aren't we? So Madagascar went from 6 to 3 to 2 from 2019 to 2021. Sri Lanka, you kind of actually, we've been talking to a few people about the potential of Sri Lanka as a cruising destination recently. Those numbers are healthy-ish, aren't they? I mean, they haven't dropped that much. In 2019 in Sri Lanka, there were 21 super yachts. In 2020, there were 22. In 2021, 15. So a bit of a drop, COVID, obviously, but, not precipitous.
Yeah. I'm surprised there were 22 there in 2020. Sorry, there's a lot of twos in that sentence. I'm surprised there were as many, but it's a positive thing.
So let's look at the icy parts of the world. In Iceland, in 2019, 7 super yachts visited, the same number visited in 2020, and in 2021, 11 yachts visited. So there you go. COVID uptick in super yacht traffic to Iceland. Greenland, this makes for some sorry reading. So in 2019, 11 yachts visited Greenland. In 2020, 0 yachts visited Greenland. And in 2021, just a single super yacht visited Greenland. Alaska, however, done really well. So in 2019, there were 54 super yachts in Alaska, 2020, 43, and in 2021, 67. So quite a big jump in super yacht activity in Alaska last year.
I presume that's because they're picking up traffic from yachts that haven't crossed back over to the Med, because the main Alaska season is kind of mid-May to September. So it is effectively a kind of direct competition with your traditional Med season.
Yeah, we need to talk to some of those captains, don't we?
Yeah, Elysium, I know, was definitely up there last year with her owner.
Brilliant. Okay, so, mixed picture, really. Very small numbers. So one or two yachts not choosing to go to some of these places has, a very considerable impact on the percentage decline and increase, etc. But, Alaska's interesting. Let's dig into that a bit more. And that brings us to the end of this week's boat briefing. Thank you, Sophia. On Monday, we'll be releasing an interview I did with Bob Dennison, he of Dennison Yachting fame. We talk about everything, really, from multicolored chinos to NFTs and whether NFTs have a place in the yachting industry. There's a lot of noise around NFTs at the moment. We're having a little look at it. Interesting things happening. So anyway, if you want to have a look at, or rather a listen to Mr. Dennison talking about all sorts of stuff, tune in on Monday. But for this week, thank you very much for tuning in. This episode has been mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'll see you on Monday. And take care.